It is our hope and intention that this recording will become a living memory and permanent record of history in the making during our lifetime, and an inspiration to future generations.
No doubt. Welcome to the Thank You Rob podcast, episode number 164. I'm your host, Rob, of course. Johnny Question Mark, unfortunately, is not here this week, which is a real bummer, to be honest, TBH, because the guest this week is a producer and musician. And John actually has history with him, which makes this a sad thing that John is not here. And I know John's not, he's not happy that he's not here too. Because in a former life, you probably know Johnny Question Mark was an MC in the rap group PLC, Playa's Lounge Crew, and then his solo album, Johnny Question Mark, Falling in Like, has a song produced by this individual as well. So PLC had a couple tracks on their album, Hype Hop, produced by the guest of today, and it would have been great to have John have that conversation with him, the guest, and talk about the beats that they used. And I'm going to ask him anyways, regardless. So John's going to get his answers, just not in person. He will get them by way of me, and I hope I do it justice. And this episode could really suck, but I promise you it won't be because of the guest. It would be because of me. And maybe I'm just being hard on myself. I don't know. We're going to find out in a few minutes. So let this be the litmus test of this podcast. Can you do me a favor? Go to thankyourob.com. In the upper right-hand corner of the website, there's a link right to this show on all the podcast platforms, podcast platforms. Go to them after you listen to this episode and review the podcast. Let me know what you think. If you think Rob sucks and the guest is great, that's awesome. I'll take that. If you think Rob sucks, Johnny Question Mark is great, I will take that. I know. Listen, I know. I'm an Uber 2, maybe even a 3 on a good day. Nevertheless, here is Thank You Rob podcast number 164 featuring Laser
Beat. I rock that. Rock that. I rock that. I rock that.
All right. Thank you, Rob Podcast. We got Laserbeak over here.
Bing, bing, bing.
You may know him from.
Yes.
I don't know where do we start
here.
I'm just going to. Okay, so I've got a laundry list of notes here. I think if you were to put these out like in a line item, it would be one hell of a CVS receipt.
Pretty good, right?
Yeah.
You'd be upset at how much you bought.
Right. Or upset about like the waste of paper that's
right, exactly.
That's happened before your eyes.
Exactly. You don't want it.
That and it never stops.
It won't.
But luckily it's only down to really only two sheets.
Okay,
here.
Perfect.
Doomtree.
Yes.
The Plastic Constellations. Mm. Mixed Blood Majority.
Mm-hmm.
Shredders.
Mm-hmm.
Nightstone. And of course, your own podcast, Tuesdays with Laserbeak, which is
short-lived, but
short-lived?
A blast.
Okay.
And
okay.
I just saw my ex-co-host, Jaka, this morning for coffee. So
okay.
In real life, it still exists.
IRL.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
We just talk about, you know, the cheesy pop music we like
sure.
over coffee in person now.
Look at you. That's a podcast
right
there.
I know.
So before we started recording, we were talking about... You don't listen to podcasts.
I don't.
And you should. Are you? Should I not be bringing this public?
No, let's go straight. Let's go straight into it.
Yeah.
This is a podcast. I guest on podcasts.
Yeah.
I just have never made the time to. It's too daunting. It's already too daunting for me to like stay up on current music,
yeah.
TV, and movies.
It's work.
And so the idea of adding in podcasts, which is like the clip at which those things are coming out.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't even keep up with one. I remember Doomtree Tours, like the earlier big podcasts, like, God, what were, like, who's the Mark Maron guy?
Yeah, WTF. Big
WTF.
Fan.
Like, we would
big
listen
fan.
To that in the van. We'd yep. listen to a lot of comedy ones. And I was like, yeah, some science ones. Of course, Dessa was in the van. I was like, this is cool when I've had like 8 hours to kill in a van.
Sure, sure.
And then the second I didn't have 8 hours to kill in a van, I was like, I would rather do anything but listen.
The circumstances change, right? Yeah. Things are different.
But I'll get, maybe Thank You, Rob will be the paradigm shift for me.
Oh, wow.
This might be it. Well, let's listen to myself.
I would be honored. I would be honored.
Yeah.
So the she was the co-host, right?
Jaca, yes. Jaca okay. Maldonado, okay. Yep. And she is still like crushing it. She like went to school for this stuff, and she has been working with Nora from the Sorry, Thanks for Asking podcast.
Funny.
And now
she's
working with Roman Mars at 99% See This I Don't Know podcast. Nora, I know Roman Mars. But
Nora McInerney.
Yes, right? Exactly.
So what's funny, that I suppose is not funny, I went to school with her husband, Aaron, who, another Aaron.
Yes.
That passed away from a brain tumor, which sparked the whole movement of Still Kicking. Yeah. Yeah.
Amazing.
Small world. Yeah. Let's go with that.
There we go.
Yeah. And I don't want to make this sad.
Yeah.
But he was such a good dude.
Yeah.
Such a good guy. Yeah. So it was so sad.
Fuck.
Yeah. Anyway, so
how about swearing on here? Can
fuck,
I swear?
Fucking bring it.
It's heavy, man.
Bring it, man.
Life's heavy.
Yeah. So let's bring it up.
Okay.
Let's bring it up.
Let's do it. Nice.
So before we really sink our wings and teeth into this, you see what I did
really
there?
Really good.
You see what I did? God. That's what you get from me. Huh?
That's
what do you want?
You've done your research. I'm impressed.
So as far as guests, when you're doing a podcast, you're easy because I've kind of not followed you, but your information is out there too. There's previous interviews that are easy to follow.
I'm an open book.
You are an open book.
Yeah.
Let's open that book.
Let's open it up. It's truly just because I get so nervous trying to hold things in that I'm an oversharer, which I've learned in marriage counseling.
Wow.
And it's not a great thing always, but it's just if I hold things in, I just freak the fuck out.
You know, I'm glad you say that. On that note of marriage counseling, when people say that, they assume there's something wrong.
Right.
And that's not always the case.
Well,
and I don't want to, we don't have to talk about that, honestly, marriage counseling is a great thing. Can be a great thing.
100%. I think it's an amazing thing. And I think, yes.
Communication is key.
If you're in a relationship, I would highly recommend considering it. If you're not married or if you've been married for 50 years and you don't think anything's wrong, like it is an eye opener. It has opened my eyes. I think it's made me a better person whether or not me and my wife stay married for the rest of our lives. Mm-hmm. I can say it's made me more aware of myself and also just other people. I'm a big pro marriage therapy counseling guy.
Yeah.
Just therapy and counseling in general.
I would say if you're not married, marriage counseling is probably not great.
Couples therapy?
There you go.
Yeah, okay. We just called something different, right?
Sure,
but I did hear about, again, so here's from the guy who doesn't listen to podcasts. Heard about the guy who does a lot of podcasts, Armchair Expert,
Dax Shepherd,
Dax and his wife, Kristen Bell, I think had both been in, you know, long-term relationships before they met. And they started in couples therapy like immediately after starting to date. They were like, we don't want to fuck this up. Let's just start now.
Sure.
So we keep the communication going. And they're still, I believe they're still in it. I could be butchering this because I didn't listen to the actual interview. But I was like, that's so cool.
Yeah.
Good for those
especially,
guys.
Especially, you know, celebrity life. I could only imagine is another level, a different level of difficulties, and it has its own problems, right?
100%. Money doesn't fix everything. It seems like it would, though.
from the outside looking in, it looks pretty nice.
Seems like it would mostly fix everything.
So I had a topic to talk about here. I guess I don't know. Like, I know that you're an R&B guy, right? You go back pretty deep with R&B.
Yes.
How are you with hip-hop, though? What's your knowledge?
Okay. It's a great question. I go back. I mean, first music I really started listening to was R&B as a kid.
Yeah.
And I grew up very religious, very Christian, evangelical Christian household. So it was secular music wasn't really allowed.
Mm-hmm.
But I could listen to the radio. So I couldn't like go out and buy the TLC tape, but I could listen to the radio and hear a couple TLC songs. Yeah. So yeah, I go, you know, and since I've gotten older, I've gone back into 70s, 60s, 70s, 80s, but I start with 90s R&B.
Okay.
I get that immediately gets me into like kind of pop hip hop. So like Young MC, Biz Markie, that type of stuff, you know, like the stuff that isn't swearing and all that stuff.
Yep. Pretty clean rap.
and a lot of Christian rap. So Michael Peace was like my favorite rapper as a kid, who was like reformed ex-gangbanger from Philly who then just made like God music.
Okay.
But still kind of hard.
Interesting.
Anyways, so
that it's the impression you get from when you're not in or even understanding that there's a scene of that.
Yeah, oh, like, yeah, there was.
The guy that I get tattooed from loves, I can't think of the guy. He's a very popular Christian rapper.
Oh, right, Corday. What the hell's his name? I know exactly who you're talking about. He's very popular.
Yeah.
It's not Corday, is it?
No, that doesn't sound right. Either way, it's like...
No, I want to Google that.
He didn't force me to listen to it, but he was like, just listen, you know?
Yeah.
And I was like, okay. It's definitely... I think it's there's a thin line between being preachy and just, and like, I think I'm wearing a Brother Ali shirt, so he's kind of a good example. And some people might argue that he might be a little pushy with his message.
I think he's had his moments, but when he hits it right, he finds a way to balance preachy and just talking about his life.
Right. And
but it's hard when you're trying to talk about a God or a...
Sure.
It's, how do you not be preachy?
But as somebody like me, I'm an atheist.
Yeah.
But I like someone with a positive message.
Yes.
If you cuss or not, I don't really care.
No.
And just don't force it upon me.
Exactly right.
Right.
I personally love to cuss, and I love hearing other people cuss. but also, totally respect you if that's something you don't want to do.
Can I just sidebar for a second? Because I realize there was something I wanted to say out of the gate. Was I'm a Packers fan, and I know you're not.
It's okay.
Just so you know.
You know what? Years of therapy too has gotten me to just kind of see the good in all people. And
I don't mean to sound like a goody Packers fan.
Yeah.
It's been. I grew up in Minnesota as a Packers fan. My dad's from Wisconsin.
Yeah.
And
that's hard.
It's hard, but it's.
Did you get your ass kicked?
No.
Oh, nice. Okay.
But it's been, for the most part, pretty easy because the Packers usually win.
They're really good.
Yeah. So
they've had a really good run.
But here's the thing: is I'm the type of Packers fan that listen, Rodgers is going to retire at some point.
Oh yeah.
And they're going to start from scratch again.
Well.
And there's going
to
be
start from scratch again.
Right.
From Favre to Rodgers.
Right.
To whoever
there might be a good. But the likelihood of three quarterbacks in a row. Anyways. There's going to be bad years at some point, right? And the Vikings, it's just, you know, everything comes and goes in waves.
It's mostly bad.
When that time comes and the Packers suck, the Vikings make it a long way if they make it to the playoffs, to the Super Bowl. I'm going to root for them.
Yes.
Right?
Wow. We're not going to cut this out of the podcast?
We're not going to cut this out. Okay. I'm proud to say that because
I'm
a proud...
Oh, yeah. I'm realizing the Packers memorabilia right now.
Yeah, I figured
now.
You're looking that way. You're going to see it eventually.
I didn't even see it.
And it could stop you dead in your tracks and be like...
head.
You could just rip the headphones
off. Packers.
And say, fuck this, I'm
out
of here.
Oh, my God. No, I'm into it. I'm in like enemy territory. Let's go.
I didn't realize what this place was.
No way, man. You got to... I'm sleeping with the enemy right now. I don't think I've ever rooted it. No, I have rooted against the Packers when the Vikings aren't in it. But my wife grew up in Chicago.
Okay.
My dad grew up in Chicago, like hardcore Bears fans all around me, who luckily also hate the Packers. So that's usually our common ground. like we come together.
Right.
But yeah, no, as I get older, I'm good with it.
Sure.
You know, we're just trying to find joy in whatever we can.
Yeah. I know not everyone gets to this point in life. And again, I'm not saying this to be, I'm better than you.
Yeah.
But it's just a game that you cannot control. I
Correct.
Know people that are like, it wrecks their day if the Vikings or the Packers lose.
Oh my
God. Their next day, they're wrecked.
I had a photographer friend. I mean, we were in our 20s. We thought this was like the $1 million idea, but she was just like, she wasn't a huge sports fan. She's like, I just want to go and take like really beautiful black and white photos of sports fans in agony, in the throes of agony. Because it is in like a single shot. It looks like it's just terrifying.
Yeah.
You know, like grown men crying and just like hands on their faces. Right. It is like such a fucking roller coaster.
Yeah.
Whew.
Let's bring the sidebar back now.
Sports.
I just wanted to get this sports stuff out of the way.
Absolutely. You know what? I'll meet you where you're at and... Packers or Vikings, whatever.
Whatever. It is
what
it
is. Sports are fun.
Yeah, they are. So, I posed to you the topic to start this off was I saw an Instagram post. Instagram is kind of my main social media.
Yep.
Somebody had this post of this guy. He was in his car and he was saying how in hip hop, in rap, artists are not treated the same as far as like an older artist releasing a new album the same way and getting radio play.
Yeah.
So we have an interesting perspective here in Minnesota because we don't have a dedicated hip-hop station, an urban station anymore.
Yeah, totally.
Like we used to, which is a real bummer.
Yeah.
That's a shame. But I remember the same thing. Like Snoop Dogg would release an album and like there's no radio play out here at least.
Correct.
Whereas, like, if Aerosmith releases a new album, the radio is going to play it.
Yeah.
You know,
I actually don't know if that's true or not, but I will trust you.
Right. So it's true. For the most part.
I'm sure it is true.
Yeah. But, I mean, there's some exclusions to that rule.
Yeah.
Like, Kanye seems to, like, if Kanye and Jay-Z release an album, there's going to be a single. Kendrick is an exception to that, too.
Yeah. I mean, it's so, radio in general is such a tricky one now, right?
It is.
It's like, I don't even know what the hell, and I don't really listen. I think a lot of people don't really listen to the radio because they are their own DJ now with like,
yeah.
You make your own playlist and you whatever, New Music Friday. So yeah, that it's so hard to even know what the fuck will stick.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think in general, unless you're some legacy act like the Foo Fighters or something like that.
Sure.
But otherwise it's like, yeah, you get old. Like, what do you expect? Like there's going to be some new people that come in and take your spot.
Yeah.
I think rap is like we're seeing for the first time. I mean, Jay-Z was the first person that lived past at that level that like lived to grow old in this shit and still be able to drop like pretty tight verses, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Like his latest. Where did his most recent verse pop up on? He's really fucking. Oh, the Pusha T album.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
It's really good. Like everything Jay does still, he's got to be like. Almost 60? How the fuck old is Jay-Z?
He's 50, in his 50s 50? For sure. Yeah. And he's still doing it.
Yeah. And so, obviously in Minnesota, we're seeing that. Like, Atmosphere is old.
Yeah.
You know? Doomtree is old. I mean, fuck, man. I'm going to be 40. Like, yes, it's all old. And we're seeing for the first time that it is possible to even have a career past 30, but it is still a very young person's game.
For sure.
And especially in, it's hard to age gracefully in this shit because there's so much nuance in production. Like, I don't know. This is probably not the right take, but like, okay, say rock music. Like, four instruments generally, like two guitars, bass, drums, vocals. The core production doesn't change, like the way you record it might, whatever.
Yeah.
But like, that's kind of, you're in there, you're in that pocket. Like, hip hop production, if you listen to rap singles on the radio 10 years ago, it sounds absolutely nothing like what it sounds like
now.
And that's changing constantly. And so the idea that you could somehow not only stay up to date on what's happening, but then like actually change your style to adapt to what's happening currently is insane.
Right.
Snoop's done it actually more than most.
Yeah.
Remember Snoop Lion?
That was crazy. What did you think of Snoop Lion?
I was okay with it.
I liked it.
Oh, that was cool.
Yeah. Honestly, probably the best thing I'd heard from Snoop.
Yeah.
At that era.
I loved when he did the record with oh my God, why am I blanking on
Wiz Khalifa?
No, he did the Sexual Eruption song, and then
Thundercat or
he did it with Jesus Christ. I should be
Jesus
the
Christ.
R&B heads are gonna hate me for this one.
I know who you're talking about.
God, why do I want? Oh, Teddy Riley.
Teddy Riley
produced Sexual Eruption.
And I didn't know that.
He ended up producing the majority of that record.
Okay.
And it was like Snoop going to this like kind of throwback R&B thing.
Yeah,
anyways,
blah, I remember blah. That. I remember that.
Yes, hard to age gracefully in hip hop. I have gone the route. Okay, it's a lot easier to age gracefully as a producer.
Right.
It really doesn't fucking matter.
Yeah.
As long as you can figure out how to make hot shit. But like it definitely takes the pressure off not having to be like, oh, do I have like a turkey chin now? Or you know what I mean? Like no one gives a shit.
Right.
Most people don't know what I look like to begin with.
Sure.
So it's like that is nice and you can kind of be a chameleon. And so I don't, because words end up defining people.
Yeah.
Luckily, I don't have to use them for my like day to day. And so I can just like be like, yeah, I'm going to make this reggaeton beat today. And I'm going to work in like, I'm going to work with an artist who's doing, you know, Afro beats, or I'll make an R&B song, I'll make a fucking country song. Like, it doesn't matter. That is a very freeing feeling that has helped me be like, oh yeah, I can do whatever. I'm really malleable. For the lyricists and rappers and just vocalists in general, I think it's hard to like write words, period.
Yep.
That's really hard.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to connect with people. And then it's hard to really connect with people steadily as you age. Because like, someone I remember saying, like, you know, your 20s, that's when everything is exciting. Like the ups and the downs, like you have the most fuel to talk about the shit and it's really interesting and you're going through it for the first time and it's like, it's really deep. And then your 30s, you're like kind of getting, not boring, but like only a few people have figured out how to talk about that in a really interesting way.
Sure.
You know, any rapper that we loved, like Nas or Jay, like they went through their growing pain of like, we listened to him for the street shit and that was their life. And then they got a bunch of money and then that
got
was their
the
life.
Streets.
And I appreciate that they rapped about their life still, but I was like, I don't even know what that is. Like, I don't know what kind of painting you're talking about. I don't know what car that is. Right. Like, so it's
Jay-Z
hard.
Jay-Z taught me about Basquiat.
Right?
Yeah.
That's
awesome. Some adult shit right
that's
there.
That's fucking awesome.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I digress. But yeah, it's really hard to be a lyricist that can like keep stringing that along because life is long if you live long enough.
Right.
And it gets kind of the same.
Right.
I don't know. Like you can only talk about love or heartbreak or struggle
for
so much without it being boring.
Mm-hmm.
So
I've always, when I did rap, I always struggled with writing. I don't know why, because I have a creative mind, but I usually do it with my hands, with creating something a visual or something. But when it comes to displaying that with words, maybe it's the pressure of it. Let me tell you how bad it is. I'm retired from rapping, but. I did a track a couple years ago with my friend in Mankato, Professor Fresh.
I remember that name.
And he's working on a project right now with Capacity. Capacity, yeah.
I also remember Capacity.
Yeah.
This is like DU Nation shit.
Right, yeah. Hell yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. We should just... There should be a rehashing of DU Nation. Mm-hmm. Okay, so anyway, we're getting off track.
Yeah.
The Capacity and Fresh are making a Black Sabbath sampled album.
Amazing.
Which is very cool in itself, but there's a track that they're sampling of. Do you know Black Sabbath at all?
I know the songs.
The big songs. Yeah. Okay. So there's a song called The Wizard that's just... They have so many like legendary sounding songs.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Epic.
The Ozzy era, in my opinion.
Yep.
And I kind of talked my way into getting onto this song. And it's like four bar verses here and there. And it's like, I've got four. I've been working on this for like a month.
I can do four. Even I can do four from time to time.
So I'm struggling with that right now. And if Fresh hears this, I'm sorry. I am working on it, right? Capacity.
It takes time.
I'm working on it.
You know, art takes time.
Yes.
You can't force it.
Yeah. You want trash? I'll give it to you in a day.
Exactly.
And not that it's going to be mind-blowing anyway.
It's going to be mind-blowing. Well, I know. Now you're kind of setting yourself. People are going to be like, wow, this fucking four-bar better be solid.
Yeah. The four so far, meh.
You're feeling okay.
It's all right.
It's not going to be terrible. Right.
Because of, you said you're turning 40.
I am.
In our lifetime, we've seen really the birth of hip-hop, the birth of this genre of music.
Yeah.
And watching it grow and branch out into all these subgenres, hardcore, horrorcore,
fuck, man,
whatever,
mumble rap,
the fuck, right.
Yeah, exactly.
SoundCloud,
and it's happening right now, like it's changing as we speak.
Yeah, and it's very cool to see. The one thing I love, and I've said this many times on this show, is that I love production and the samples, and then discovering those samples, that original song.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's like
and sometimes you stumble upon
it's like a treasure hunt.
Because I love classic R&B soul music.
Yep.
And so many songs.
Oh my God.
Producers sample that stuff. Yeah. And it doesn't have to be that, but listening to it, you're just like, oh shit.
Isn't
that
cool?
That's a Kanye used that little snippet.
It's just such a like Easter egg. I mean, that's what it is, right? You're like, oh my God, I found it.
Yeah.
It's
right.
An Easter egg.
Exactly.
And like, and then to be able to appreciate both, like in the same way, I don't really love, I was just talking about this yesterday. I don't love cover songs generally. Mm-hmm. I'm like, I just rather listen to the original. But there's a band currently called Muna that does like they're an original band. They do awesome music, but whenever they do cover a song, it's like a song that's perfect, and they do it even better. Like they just covered Britney Spears' "Sometimes" from her first album, which was like her ballad, you know, like, and they crushed it. They covered the Normani single from last summer, "Motivation." Mm-hmm. Like they crush it.
Wow. Are they local? Where are they from?
I don't know where they're from, actually, but it's a three-piece. They're like they're putting a record out at the end of this month that I'm the most excited about ever.
Muna.
I think that's how you pronounce it. M-U-N-A. Like, catchy as fuck.
Okay.
check them out. All that to say, where the fuck was I going with that one?
Oh, you better figure it out. Oh, my God, I know. Blow this show. Things were going so great.
I mean, I guess, like, sometimes I hear a rap song with a throwback sample, and yep. I know the sample, and I'm like, oh, disappointed, because I'm like, the original's better. But a lot of times I'm like, it's not better or worse. It's just different. I think that's so fascinating that you can. I mean, that's the whole idea of sampling is finding new creative life in something, right?
Right.
So it's like, and I love that hip hop is birthed out of like necessity.
Yep.
So it's like disco with the turntables. Okay. Now we figured out that we can like take our dad's record player. Oh, there's a cassette player that I can plug it into and make like hit the pause button. And now I can loop something for 10 seconds or mm-hmm. 2 seconds. And it's a drum break. And now I can like record that over and over again, like with no money and no instruments.
Right.
Like I just had my,
just what you have around
my
the house.
Dad's tape deck.
Yeah.
That is music to me. That's the
Absolutely.
Beauty of just like, that's evolution. That's the shit. And now more than ever, through technology, like my kids on the iPad could be like, they could download a free app, they could make a sick beat, and mm-hmm. they could upload it to SoundCloud.
Yeah.
Like without me.
Right.
And they're 8.
Yeah.
You know, like that's amazing. When I got into production 2000, and you know, the entry level was you buy this MPC, which I still use an MPC.
Mm-hmm.
But it was like $1,200 new at Guitar Center. Mm-hmm. And I had to go. POS took me because he had been making beats for the first time. And it's like me, my mom, and POS. And my mom fronted me the $1,200. God bless her.
Oh,
and my dad. Moms get a lot of love, but
sure.
It was their money. My mom and dad gave me $1,200 that I paid off over the summer working at the Dollar Theater. And that was the only way. Like there's... So that was a lot of money, and like not everyone has a mom and dad that can front them $1,200
right.
in the year 2000, which was probably more like twice that or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
So I just love that the playing field has been leveled.
Mm.
And it wasn't that long after that, maybe 10 years later, I was in like a Red Bull beat battle, and I was kind of feeling myself because like Doomtree was getting bigger, and I had just put out a solo album, and like we were starting to tour, and I was like, I'm just kind of the shit. You know, that like... You know, my whole life is, look, being a creative is like probably 90% complete self-doubt and hatred.
Sure.
And then 10% of like, I'm the fucking shit. No one's better than me. And so it was just, I caught myself in that moment.
Yeah.
And of course I go up. DJ Premier is, it's at First Avenue's main room.
Yeah.
DJ Premier is the guest, like whatever, host. Slash whatever. And I go first round up against this kid, Young Fed, who's 15, mm-hmm. and he's using like Fruity Loops or whatever. And I had actually hung out with him the night before because they had this little mixer. And I was like, oh, yeah, you know, this kid's cool. He's 15. That's exciting for him. Like, mm-hmm. he's probably just happy to be here. And I got fucking smoked. First round, like torched, sold out main room. Crowd is
so
like.
I know that they do these beat battles,
yeah.
but I've never been to one to see how it works. Do you just go up and play the
yeah,
beat?
You just go up and like you basically hit play for like 30 seconds. And so it's its own genre, honestly, like
sure.
beat battles, instrumental shit. It's like I was just playing beats that I've been working on that I thought were really tight, but were more like songs.
Mm-hmm.
And this kid just fucking smoked me.
Wow.
And I thought, you know, I'd burned a CD with 20 beats, because I was like, I'm going to make it to the last round. And so I planned it out. I'm going to play like the best ones last because I know I'm going to get to the end.
Mm-hmm.
And you went back and forth 2 times, right? So me, then him, then me, then him.
Mm-hmm.
First one, he smoked me, and I was like, fuck, I got to go all the way to the end of the CD to play like the best one that I thought was going to
yeah.
be in the finals.
Yeah.
And not even that one won.
Oh, really?
And so then
Damn.
I just had to like hang out and get drunk and just like cheer on these young kids. But that was like a very...
Drink away your
yeah,
sorrows.
Yeah, exactly. But it was so. But it was also very cool. It's like,
yeah.
God, that was such a great. It was humbling.
Yep.
But I was also excited, and
sure.
this kid was great, and his beats were great, and I was like, that. There it is. Like this kid got Fruity Loops,
mm-hmm.
figured out how to make bangers,
yep.
and he just torched me. It doesn't matter if I've got 10 years more experience,
sure.
or I know more about record digging, or
yeah.
you know the fucking art. He torched me.
Yeah.
And I love leveling the playing field. I'm so for that.
Someday. Your kids could make a hotter beat than you can, you know? And someday,
and
you just have to deal
up.
With it.
That day is coming sooner
and
than
later. And
they're
going to use some app to do it, you know what I mean?
It'll be AI. They'll be like, I just typed in a word and it kind of spit this thing out.
You know, it's one the physical action of like when you're hitting the pads on an MPC to make a beat.
Yeah.
I, it's hard to believe that maybe it is the accessibility of like an app is right there. And of course that you can assign like samples.
Yeah,
to,
you can
to pads
still hit
on
like
the screen.
A fake pad, yeah. Which also counts. Like that is sure. There is something about touching something with your physical body, and that triggers a sound. That is like the magic to me. I've never been able to. I do some work in a laptop now, mm-hmm. but if it was all just clicking and moving a cursor, I just don't think. No matter if I was making way cooler shit, I think I would just be like bored. I love moving. It's almost like I'm not a great dancer, but it feels in the moment when you're like really locking in.
Yeah.
It does transcend because you're not like, it's not just numbers and blocks and grids. It's like, no, this is, I'm just going to hit it because I'm feeling it. Mm-hmm. And that's what it is. So it is like really almost archaic. It's like
sure.
early days, like banging a rock on another
rock. Right, right.
I like that.
Well, let's get into this. How about...
Yeah, let's do
it. Because I listened to some of the Tuesdays with Laserbeaks podcast.
Short-lived foray into podcasting.
So why? What made you stop?
Well, the pandemic definitely slowed it down.
Right,
me and Jake, I kind
of
got...
We did have one of those, didn't we?
Yeah, right? Pandemic? I know. It turns out it's possibly still going
on. For 5 years.
Yeah.
5 years.
I got talked into it through Twitter because this person, Jaka, hit me up and she had been coming to shows and she was like, I am like into podcasting. I've gone to school for it. Mm-hmm. And I think that I had a blog. So I'm going to date myself here. Like I had a Tuesdays with Laser Week weekly blog that I kept up for like 8 years. Mm-hmm. And in the height of the 2010s, that was like essentially a Doomtree's newsletter. It was like a check-in from me every Tuesday with a personalized, like, hey, here's what's actually going on. Here's what these artists are working on. Here's what my kid is doing. You know, it was just mm-hmm. like a very personal way of communicating with people that were.
And that's still there,
checking
too, right?
For
it's
us.
Still on the website.
It's still on the website. Yeah, I don't update it anymore. But sure. Yeah,
it's archived.
It's archived
the
for
internet.
Sure.
Thank
oh
you,
yeah,
internet.
It's on there forever. and so Jacob was just like, I think this would work really well as a podcast, and I will help you do it. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I don't know how to do this. She's mm-hmm. like, that's why I'm here. And so we literally like. I'd never met her. She came to the Doomtree office and she was like, here's what I think we could do. And I was like, well, let's just fucking try it. Mm-hmm. And we did. And it was fun. And so it was just like me and her talking. And then we'd bring in friends that were musicians and mostly in the Twin Cities. And it was a lot more about process and just like, you know, what it's like to be an artist mm-hmm. and more like pull the curtain back shit. It wasn't like, you know, go in depth on the chord progression of your new single right. or whatever. It was just like getting to the human elements of like what makes people tick, especially right. artists, because they're fascinating.
Yeah.
And they're infuriating also. Mm-hmm. So
I went right to the Justin Vernon episode.
Yeah.
And first of all, I love that you asked how you pronounce. Is it Bon Iver, Bon Iver, Bonavir?
Yeah. I can't even remember what he said because I still
fuck
it up.
He said Bon or Bone.
Bon Iver.
Bon Iver. So thank you for clearing the air on that.
Absolutely. That
but one thing, and I'm gonna, with your permission, I'd like to use this in this podcast because you used the phrase talking about your origin story.
Yeah,
you know, and
totally.
I was like, wow, that's a great way to just phrase that. A very very superhero.
Yes,
way
totally. Yeah, let's get epic
to do that. Yeah. So let's get into your origin story. Laserbeak. First of all, we're going to start with the name.
Yeah.
I understand it's not because of Transformers.
It's not.
But so
but when, subconsciously it probably is.
Yeah, it's one of those because the Laserbeak character in Transformers was a cassette.
Yes.
Right?
Correct.
Did not actually play anything when you put it in. The guy's name was Soundwave. It went into his chest.
Right.
Yeah.
So the tape, I've still like a little bit, you might be able to fill me in here because yes, I'm sure at a young age I watched Transformers the cartoon. Mm-hmm. Then I wasn't like an avid Transformers person. I wasn't super
into
it. Yeah. And then, you know, fast forward, whatever, 15 years, I'm making beats and it's the year 2000. So you need a rap name. Mm-hmm. There's no like, God bless them nowadays. It's like Denzel Curry. Really? You just use your name. It's sick. Like, awesome. Jack Harlow. Cool.
Yeah.
If I could have just been Aaron Mader at the time, that would have been awesome.
Yeah.
But no, you need a rap name. And I was working with. At this point, I was asked to be in Doomtree, but I hadn't actually made any beats yet. They were like, you'll figure it out. You're in. Steph took me to POS, took me to get the MPC. Like, eventually, you'll make some beats for us. So the first things I started making were for this crew over on the north side called Carp D. And I also worked with P Family a little bit. And so it was like Northside dudes making mixtapes back when, like, mix CDs, I guess. But, yeah, like, back when people were still selling literal, like, burned CDs out of their trunks.
Sure.
And, like, making money doing that. Just, yeah, like pop-up shop style. And I had connected with them, and I was making beats, and one of the mixtapes was coming out, and they're like, we need to credit you, man. So what's your name? So I had, like, I think I had that night to come up with a name. And me and my friend got drunk and threw two words together, and we thought Laserbeak was funny. And then, like, 2 months later, I start working with more rappers, and all of a sudden, everyone starts giving me the kind of, like, wink, like, I like Transformers too, man. Shit is tight. And
I knew he didn't know.
I was like, what do you mean? Yeah, I mean, Transformers, yeah, dude, cool.
Cool, thanks, man.
And, and then finally I, like, looked it up. It was like, oh, fuck.
Yeah.
But so subconscious got me. Luckily, Hip Hop Z.
Yep.
Laserbeak.
So you went with the Z.
I went with a Z.
Okay.
No, without question.
You're a cover.
Oh, yeah. I was good. So even when the Michael Bay Transformers reboot happened, I've never got, I mean, probably just because I'm not famous enough, but I have yet to get a cease and desist.
Sure,
I'll knock on the.
Yeah.
But yeah, no cease and desist.
Listen, if somehow Vanilla Ice can get away with sampling Queen.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? You're going to be okay.
I'll be just fine. You know, the best thing that would probably happen to me is if Michael Bay sued me. It'd be great. It'd be great publicity.
By the way, I'm not a lawyer, professionally at least.
Yeah,
But I'm more than willing to give away bad advice.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, I'll lean on you when the when the day comes.
Rob, I need some bad advice. What do you got? How should I proceed?
Yeah.
But the thing about when you were talking with Justin about like listening to music that really got him into music, like the first thing that really resonated with him, I believe he said Primus was one of the artists, right? And I was like, man, that got me thinking about, like, the first thing I ever heard was beyond, like, radio, was, like, getting a tape of AC/DC, and then another friend gave me Ice Cube's death certificate, right? And I'm like,
just heavy.
Okay, these are cool. These are great, because you're not going to hear this. Hey, AC/DC was on the radio, I suppose, but Ice Cube sure wasn't here,
Definitely
at least not in Minnesota.
No. God, no.
But if somebody would have given me something obscure, like today it's easier to find obscure, right?
Without
and not that Primus is obscure, but, you know, they're a little out there.
Yeah,
right?
Outliers for sure
at
the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. They were probably like on that early wave of like cult following, but you kind of had to like get put on by a friend, right?
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. So what was yours? So you were a Christian.
Yeah, I was a Christian rap guy.
Rap guy.
I mean,
do you remember like the first like thing you heard
that got me?
Yeah, where you're just like, okay, this is different.
Yeah.
And for one, they're cussing. You know,
right? Totally. I mean, honestly, it's weird. It wasn't, I don't think I felt that from like a musical, like, oh, I'm inspired to go make music now and hearing this.
Yeah.
Till a bit later. And so I went from like this R&B hip hop grade school time to districts changed. I went to a new school in seventh grade for junior high. All my friends went to another school. And I kind of ended up falling in with these indie rock kids right away. And so they were all like, they were listening to Sonic Youth and all this shit. And I just hadn't really listened to, we had a radio station here called 93.7 The Edge, which
the
was
edge,
like alternative rock at the time.
Yep.
And I was like, fuck, man, I don't get this. And like, I didn't really get Nirvana. I didn't get grunge yet. And there was a Tori Amos song called Cornflake Girl that was like played on the alternative rock station, but it was still like a female singer, which was like, you know, I was listening to Mariah Carey and SWV and shit. And so I was like, oh yeah. And it kind of has like an R&B feel and she's playing piano. So Tori Amos is like my gateway into indie rock. Then I heard Pavement, which to this day is one of my favorite bands of all time, but certainly from like seventh grade through whatever, the end of high school, was my all-time favorite band. And they're like, have you listened to Pavement ever? Do you know them at all?
Are they, I know the name. Are they a Seattle rock band?
They were Stockton, California, but they were like really like indie rock, like what a lot of people would probably call slacker rock. Just like dudes that didn't give a shit and were just like doing crazy stuff. The lyrics didn't rhyme. It was really like, it was really fucking cool to me. And that, I remember hearing that and just being like, because they had like one song that was able to cross over to alternative rock radio called Gold Sounds. And I just remember being like, fuck, I want to play guitar. Like, this is cool. I have no idea what they're doing. So that's like a weird one that got me in. And that truly, like, my first songs I ever wrote was, it was my dad's acoustic guitar. He was like a youth pastor. And so he had like a banged up acoustic guitar he had like tucked away in the closet. So I met all these kids. They were already in bands. I was like, fuck, I should probably figure this out. And that was that, you know. And then, of course, like every other kid, like 3 days later, I was like, I'm ready to start a band. I think I figured out how to like play three notes.
Right,
and,
right, yeah.
And that was that. That was like, that was my, that launched me into it. So, yeah. But as far as like a transition from that into how I transitioned into hip hop production was, it was the Roots album, Things Fall Apart.
Okay.
Because I was a rock kid. Then I was an indie rock kid, like total indie rock snob. Like the guy that would, like if you were wearing a Sonic Youth shirt, for example, I was the kid that was like, well, what's your favorite album? And if it was like the new one, I'd be like, oh, you're not a true head.
Yeah,
then. Like I was
really.
Like the total fucking asshole snob.
Yeah.
Then
You're overlooking something here because you were a sax player.
Yes, I was. Sax, and alto sax.
Alto sax.
Good and, research.
And the sexiest of I would say the sexiest instrument of the 80s and 90s.
100%.
If not all the way to today.
I think it's back. I think it truly has come back. And
full
now
circle.
It's like, I love it. Yeah. I love that it's in modern production.
Yeah.
I use it. I overly use it in my samples. It's just like a fucking,
great.
You know, let's
That's awesome to hear. Because honestly, I listen to the nostalgic music that I listen to. Is So yours is probably the 90s R&B, right? So mine
Some
is 80s. Like 80s pop.
Yes.
80s pop music to me is always like, and there was so much sax.
Yeah, so much sax. Yeah. And now, dude, I just snuck in a sax solo sample on a new Dessa song, and she's like okay with it. I'm like, this is fucking crazy. That we're gonna roll with this.
Did you specifically discuss the sax with her?
I was like, cool with the sax sample? She's like, yeah, it seems to fit. I was like,
all right, cool,
yes,
cool.
We've hit it like a turning point,
yeah,
in culture. But yeah, saxophone. But yeah, it wasn't like, you know, I love Branford Marsalis and Ornette Coleman, but I didn't hear their music and be like, I want to create something.
Sure.
Hip hop. It took me a while because I was just in high school. Having to go back and do the history. You asked me like, what's, you know, do I know my history or whatever? Like I didn't really, cause I was an indie rock kid for 6 years.
Sure.
And then Things Fall Apart comes out and it was a live band playing it. So the guitar player in me is like, holy shit. Like this sounds like sampled rap, but it's a live band and Questlove was going insane. Like, and that record was the rabbit hole for me that sent me, you know, oh, Mos Def is on this album. Okay. Common's on this album. Jazzy Fat Nasty's like, went down the total rabbit hole, and I had to go back and listen to all the like the great, you know, like true head shit. I'm a collector essentially, right?
Sure.
I got to know my history, and it was like then that I really realized what sampling was, because I was always like, man, how do these guys afford like a full orchestra and blah blah? I just had no idea.
Yeah.
I had absolutely no clue how that shit worked, and when I started to learn, I was like, oh fuck, limitless possibilities. So. Anyways, I didn't really answer your question, but Pavement, I guess. Pavement. Yeah.
So the parallel for that to me, and I openly discuss this, I am a reformed juggalo.
Hey, man.
Okay.
Hell yeah.
So I know what it's like
to be like...
You don't
have to be reformed, right? Like, no. Juggalos are they cool? They seem cool.
You know, they're all right.
Yeah.
The thing is, I've got the Hatchet Man logo.
Oh, yeah.
The tattoo.
Oh, yeah, you got it.
Yeah. So when this opens you up to things in public, right?
Yeah.
You're at the gas station, you're just paying for something. And they're like, so they have this thing where they go, whoop, whoop.
Yes.
Or like, what up, ninja?
Yes.
And they'll give me that. And I'm like, oh like,
right.
Huh? Oh, yeah, yeah.
Do you give it back or are you like, oh, man, that was the old me. That was the old Rob.
I'm just kind of like, oh, yeah, ICP, yep.
You haven't covered it up, though. It's not like you're.
I'm working on it. I'm not covering it. Putting it into the fold of this.
Yes,
that
there you
I'm
go. It's a part of you. Yeah. It was a part of your life.
My wife would love for me to have it covered, but you know, it is. It was a big part
you
of my life.
You didn't meet her at like the
point.
Family gathering or whatever it was.
At the Juggalo gathering. Yeah. Love. That sounds like a Netflix show.
Totally.
Love at the gathering of the Juggalos.
Dude, I mean, we were always so fat. So Doomtree was, you know, we were like alternative hip hop, right?
Mm-hmm.
Especially at the time that we came up, and especially in this town too, in the Twin Cities, it was like pretty. Kind of purist. Rhymesayers was very much like, you know, this is like the true
absolutely
hip-hop shit, and we were like these skateboard kids that didn't really know how to even make the shit, so everything we were making sounded different. A lot of us were really influenced by rock or punk, so the beat sounded weird, but we were all just learning how to make songs. So we all at one point, like, we're very on the edge of like falling into Juggalo territory, just because, like, kind of like how Tech N9ne ended up doing it, because he was just like independent. Like, you gotta respect the Juggalo hustle. Like,
yeah,
ICP wrote the book on a lot of that independent shit. And I remember doing like a Tech Nine festival in like, not even Montana, like someplace like that though.
Kansas
like,
City, probably?
It, I wish. No, it was much less cool than that. It was like in Helena, Montana or some shit. Okay. It was in like a fucking dust bowl. Tech headlined, but it was like, oh shit, this is, it was the most Juggalos I'd ever seen at a show. And I was like, oh fuck, are we about to like be a Juggalo band? Like, not even, I was a little scared because I just had no, I knew nothing.
Because you do get, there's kind of a stigma that comes with it. Yes. You know, like you're labeled as a Juggalo band.
Yes.
And I could just, see that because you guys are the alternative.
We were
rap.
Like different. And we were, you know, there is something really inviting about that. Yeah. Now I'm talking about, correct me if I'm wrong, but I always saw as an outsider, like, well, that's really cool. They built like a fucking really cool community out of this, even if I don't understand the Faygo thing or whatever. Like,
I don't think anybody does really. Yeah.
But fuck it. And then, yeah, dude, I remember, whatever. That's cool. I think that's cool that you were a Juggalo.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And if John were here too, he was also a Juggalo too.
Amazing.
But I took it one step further with getting the tattoo.
Yeah, you did. So John doesn't have any tattoos
of. He has any tattoos. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Nice. Good for him.
But let's bring it back to pre-Doomtree.
Yeah.
Hopkins, right?
Yeah.
This is where the magic happens.
Yeah,
Hopkins
man.
Is like the hub. The Doomtree hub.
Yeah.
Is everybody from Hopkins? Except for, I know Mike McLaughlin is not.
Yeah, so most of us, I mean, and keep in mind that Doomtree, when it first started, was literally just like a made-up idea that like pretty much none of us knew how to, I think POS knew how to rap a little bit. Cecil Otter had just started rapping a little bit. And then like me and Paper Tiger didn't really make beats yet.
Sure.
Because
you guys, so Steph is coming, POS is coming from a punk band, right?
Yeah. Yep.
You were coming from the Plastic Constellations.
I was coming from an indie rock band.
And what was your role in the band?
I was a co-vocalist and co-guitar player. So I was writing the songs with my best friend Jeff, still my best friend to this day. And we were screaming and, you know, I was like fucking just doing it. And that was my first experience as touring. It's my first experience in, being signed to a record label. Like, that really was like...
What was the age of the band?
So we
like,
started,
how old were you guys?
So I picked up that acoustic guitar in seventh grade. By eighth grade, we had started the band and started calling it the Plastic Constellations, so you're stuck with it, just like I'm stuck with Laserbeak.
Yeah. Both great names, by the way.
Not bad,
no
right?
Shit.
Not
no
bad.
Shit.
No, not bad. And then, you know, by 10th grade, I think we had played that we had opened for Low in the main room, and we were...
Oh,
and then
nice.
By, like, 12th grade, I think we were signed...
Are you saying so early on you guys played the main room at First Ave?
Dude,
that's
amazing.
Great.
Absolutely
that's
amazing.
Great.
Yeah, we had consigned... This is... God, these are so many tangents, but like, you know, cut my teeth trying. You know, we're from Hopkins. We're literally playing like birthday parties and coffee shops and school dances.
Yep.
And was like in love with the girl that worked at the Orfolk Jokopus, which was later Treehouse Records on like Lindale and 26.
Yeah, yeah.
And we would just go there every weekend to like, we'd save up all our money from working at the movie theater, go buy vinyl and like cool kid shit, and convinced her to consign our demo tape. And she ended up becoming like a real big fan, like fan's not the right word, but a champion and a mentor. it was like, these kids are cool, man.
Yeah,
they're
yeah.
like fucking 14. Like, it's fine.
Sure.
And Alan from Low had come into the shop when he was in town from Duluth and was just asking her, like, he's like, we got our like annual holiday show at the main room. Like, you know any bands we should hit up? And she gave him our demo tape. She was like, this fucking band, you should hit him up. And he called my parents' house. You know, on the rotary phone or whatever. It was like, is Aaron there? This is Alan from Low. And I remember, I think, at least in my head, I may have, you know, fabricated the story. But I remember hanging up because I was like, this is a fucking prank call. Yeah, like, there's no fucking way.
Yeah.
But yeah, we played the main room. I broke, I think, 3 strings. That was my first time learning, like, oh, shit. It takes a long time to restring guitar. And you have to, like, actually talk through it. And try
so
not to be flustered.
On stage,
you're restringing? You're like, fuck.
Damn.
Yeah, just like,
wow.
You learn fast. Anyways, so I got an early glimpse at just, like, networking.
Of the rock star.
Kind of. Yeah. I mean, just like, you know, we were selling out. Foxfire Coffee Lounge was, like, a big... all ages venue downtown across from Fine Line. It was only around for like less than 2 years, but we started, you know, I convinced the booker to let us open up for bands. And within that first year, then we were headlining, we were selling out like 300 cap room. It's really exciting, man. Mm-hmm. I was like, this is fucking it. Like, this is what we're going to do. Signed to a label out in New York and like started really touring the country and just never quite like, we did sell at the main room a couple times. So we just never quite like got it to a point where it was going to be like our life. It was going to pay for shit.
Yeah.
And then of course, like mid 20s, it's like people start getting married and mm-hmm. thinking about kids, and it just kind of fizzled out. But I had already started working with Doomtree at that time, and getting into production.
Hold it right there. Yeah. So when you guys, the Plastic Constellations, where did you record at?
Well, we had a 4-track, so okay. we were recording our demo tapes like just in our basement.
Sure.
But then Craig Finn from my favorite band at the time, Lifter Puller, who now is in the Hold Steady yep. and is like OG.
Yep.
I think one of the first emails I ever sent anyone, I had gotten a Hotmail account and yeah. I like emailed the back of the Lifter Puller CD. Like, I fucking love your band. This is like the most incredible shit.
Yeah.
Probably wasn't even swearing at that point. Sure. I was like a late bloomer with swearing. Cause again, Christian background.
You got a lot of catching up to do.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And so he responded, and then like I ended up running into him at the airport, and my dad switched seats because we were both going to Chicago, and so I ended up getting to sit next to like my idol.
Wow.
Talk with him for 45 minutes on the plane, yeah. and then I gave him my demo tape, and then he had us open for the Tripler, blah blah blah. He ended up becoming a mentor and was like, you're gonna talk to this guy, Dave Gardner, you're gonna go to the Terrarium and record your EP, he's gonna cut you a deal, you're gonna bring him like $500 cash, mm-hmm. and then you're gonna make your first CD. Like, so we were doing real studio shit. Like, we were really fortunate to have some people. I think we were lucky because we were the right age where it was kind of a novelty to anyone that had been in the game for a sure. minute. So they were like, oh, these kids, this is yeah. fun. Like, yeah. yeah, let's, you know, yeah, invite them to the party or whatever. Yeah. Like, let them into the bar.
That's cool.
So we kind of got that for a while. But then, you know, the cuteness wears out. All of a sudden, you're like 20 or whatever. And people are like, oh, you're just in a band. Like, yeah. that's fine.
Yeah. When did your voice change?
Yeah. yeah. Well, so the first 7-inch we ever made, I think it's on YouTube. You can find the song Smallest Skyline in the Sky. You can tell my voice hasn't changed.
Okay.
So I sound like Kermit the Frog. Funny. It's really fucked up. And then
that's great, man. That's so yeah. awesome that your kids someday can hear that and
yeah, and roll their eyes.
Well, you know, it's. If I could hear my parents, like yeah. just the way that they talked or yeah. whatever that was on their mind at that age,
totally.
You know, at some point, it's just so cool.
Totally. Yeah. I hope that they might think that's cool at some point. We'll see. We'll
at
see.
Some point they will. Maybe not now. Maybe not yet.
40 years from now.
I want to talk at some point about Joe Mabbitt.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Because we had him on the podcast years ago. And what spawned from that was... I was doing web design at the time, and I redid his website. I did the Hideaway website and his personal joemabbitt.com.
Yeah. Really?
So what's funny is I didn't know about the Plastic Constellations
yeah.
or that.
Yeah.
The only thing I knew was like I'm just putting this album cover yeah. on his website and all these different. Who the hell are these yeah. Plastic Constellations, right? And the whole
yes.
time I'm like, so the images, the album cover stuck in my mind.
Yeah.
But I didn't know that you were part of that
yeah,
band.
Yeah, dude.
So that's
and
cool.
that was later. That's probably the second half of our career because
okay.
that's exactly right. I met Joe through the first POS album because I had four beats on that.
Okay.
And so that was the first like studio I went into to like mix a rap record. Mm-hmm. I was like, fuck, this is cool.
At the Hideaway?
Yeah, at the Hideaway. Yeah. And then I realized he was a drummer in a band called Passions. And I was like, yo. And I loved his band. And I was like, fuck, we got to get this guy to record our record. He does mm-hmm. cool shit. And we had signed to a label and they had a little budget, you know, a couple grand to do like the entire record. And
sure.
I remember like buying him a drink at the Red Dragon and being like, so we have like $2,000 total to like,
what can we get?
Record and mix. And, you know, he was yeah. like, oh. I just remember him like kind of like wincing and being like, fuck, man, fuck it. Sure. Like I'll, you know, not to say that this guy does whatever, but I somehow had like twisted his arm.
Yeah.
And he did it. And yeah, he did our
shout
last two records.
Joe.
Huge
shout
out. As I talked to him yesterday. He's one of the best human beings ever. Yeah. That's right. I wonder if that is how, because did he mix the Johnny Question Mark
he
record?
He did. Yep. Yep.
And I can't remember if I met Johnny Question Mark through Joe or if it was all just happening at once.
Sure.
Or who reached out to who. But
this open mic over here has
I know.
The answer.
Rest in peace, Johnny Question Mark. Never again.
He's still alive. We've joked around about his death
yeah.
too many times
well,
here.
Exactly.
You had no idea
yeah,
about
that. I believe
that.
That. Yeah. I believe that.
So after, is there any chance of Plastic Constellations
reuniting?
Yes.
So there was going to be a reunion show like 2 weeks ago for our bass player Jordan's wife's 40th birthday was going to be at like a VFW just for like her friends. Okay. And he had like put the date on the books like a year and a half ago. He's like, guys, we need to do this. Mm-hmm. It would mean a lot to her. It would mean a lot to me. And we were like, okay, I guess we'll block the calendar. And then it just didn't end up happening. Like it kind of like started creeping up. I had like started, granted, I have not played like an electric guitar in probably 10 years.
Sure.
I still have my dad's acoustic that I will like fuck around on, but I was like, dude, it was like a complicated, kind of like math rocky towards the end there, like really complicated, and none of us were trained, so it was all muscle memory. It's like, mm-hmm. we just would like fuck around until something sounded cool. We had no idea how it actually worked.
Sure.
It's kind of like how I make beats too. so to try to like relearn that shit is like, it was very challenging. Yeah. I figured it out, but it's probably for the best.
So you were ready.
I was ready. I felt like I felt like a hot 5 to 6 song set. I could have, okay. I had it figured out. So who's to say?
Yeah.
Maybe in the future. Okay. I don't think,
but this was more like a private.
Yeah. This was just, fun. No, okay. I don't foresee that anytime ever necessarily, okay. but I see those guys a lot, man. Sure. Like it's been cool. I'm sure maybe like you and Johnny where it's like, you know, music is such a integral part of people, especially when you're in it together.
Yeah.
As a band or a collective, it's such like a powerful thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's bigger than the sum of its, whatever that phrase is. It's bigger than the sum of its holes. I always get that fucked up.
That sounds right.
You know what I'm talking about.
Let's run with it.
It's bigger than you are as an individual when you do it with others.
Absolutely.
And it's working, but it's really hard to make that work forever.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm really happy that like, and even too with Doomtree kind of being, it's been on a hiatus for a while. Like, I still see people. It's mm-hmm. still like those bonds are always there, regardless of if a show happens or music is made. Like, those are like, this is like overstepping, but it's like, I went to war with you, kind of. Like, you know, you just feel like, fuck, we did it. Yeah. Like, we did that, and you will always have that. I think that's so powerful.
Absolutely.
Love that.
It is. We're going back to Hopkins.
Yes. All right. Right.
Back to Hopkins.
Back to Hopkins.
And so, Plastic Constellations, does it.
That's what we used to
you
say.
Just did that.
I know. So that was like, that was me in high school. So dumb.
So at some point you meet, who all is in Hopkins at the time of the Doomtree Collective?
So POS is in a rival band. He's in the pop punk band that everyone likes at school. I'm in the indie rock band that is kind of like the loners, like, you know, the dirty kids or whatever, like they used to call people. So me and Steph, POS, always had kind of like a, I don't think he felt a type of way about me, but I was always like, man, fuck that band. Fuck Ohm. Fuck Steph.
Ohm.
Like, those guys
it's
called
band.
Ohm. And so we didn't really, like, we were kind of, I think of us as rivals. I'm the type of person that usually has, I love everybody, but I usually have like, I need to have like one arch nemesis to kind of fuel me.
Sure.
So it's always like, I would always pick like a band that was bigger than me or like mm-hmm. a producer that was like just crushing it. And I would have like no valid reason to be upset with them, but it was like I needed that. I needed like
You've created it yourself.
I needed like a dartboard to throw shit at.
Yeah.
So Steph was that for me.
Okay.
And I honestly didn't. I met Mike in high school because he was from L.A. He got shipped out to Hopkins because he had an uncle in Hopkins. He got into some trouble in L.A. as a kid, and they were like, you know, we're gonna send you to fucking Minnesota. Mm-hmm. You get your act right.
You won't find any trouble here.
Yeah. So I met him. Keep in mind, I'm like an indie rock kid. He's this like insane freestyle rapper from L.A. We're all just like, what the fuck? He's walking around the school with like a huge ass boombox, like freestyling in the hallways. So we were just friends. We'd talk about like Outkast and shit together.
Yeah.
I never met Sims really until after high school. Cecil was older than me. Paper was older than me. So I didn't really even know those guys until after high school.
Okay.
And that was when we came together. Dessa was from Southwest High School, so she grew up over South Minneapolis.
Okay.
But yeah, for the most part, it was like this weird Hopkins connection mm-hmm. for all of us. It's very strange.
Yeah.
And there's more people. God, I'm trying to think of who else came out of that school around that time. But there's like a lot of shit. It was like I will say, it was a really great public high school.
Mm-hmm.
And it offered an independent study program, which I don't think it does anymore. I don't know how many schools do this anymore. But essentially, if you could convince a teacher that you had like a curriculum you wanted to learn or teach yourself and it was valid enough and they signed off on it and said, hey, I'll like meet with you periodically throughout this quarter, you could do it and get full credit for it. So instead of study hall where you got no credit, I took independent study every time. And one of those independent studies was like, I want to start a record label. Oh. So we did. We started a record label in like 10th grade called Pretentious Records, which is literally the same thing as like Doomtree starting a record label. You just say you have a record label.
Yeah.
But, you know, I want to put out a 7-inch. So I had like a semester where I just figured that I had the time to figure that out.
Yeah.
We put out a CD, our first CD with that program. Taught myself piano with that program. Like shit that really like ended up becoming my life's path. Was nurtured through that. And then on top of all that, because I never took a study hall, because all that cool shit I still got credit for, I graduated half a year early. And I moved straight to Uptown.
Yeah.
And I lived in the house of the girl who ran who worked at the record store. She's like, I got a spare bedroom. There's like five of us living here.
Wow.
And I rented a room for $300 a month. And like, bam, I was in it.
Wow.
So like my high school experience was like kind of a launching pad for me. Which I know I'm very fortunate for. And I literally think the year after they stopped that program, because they were like, wait, we can't like just let kids graduate a year early or whatever. Like, that's not okay. And I think one of those independent studies, I definitely did jack shit. You know, it's like me and my girlfriend are going to go like take a nap essentially for a whole semester. But
that's really cool.
It was cool.
I don't think a lot of schools offer that anymore.
I don't think so. So I feel very fortunate. And like that really, it was such a, as I'm older now, my kids are in school. I'm like, what a beautiful, granted, like in the wrong hands, that could go really poorly.
Oh,
but
for sure.
For someone who kind of sees their passion or knows what they want to do, like me and my filmmaking friend made a documentary. Like we made a full length documentary with like
about what?
It was about like, can punk rock exist in suburbia? So it was like, it's pretty like, wasn't really a documentary. It was us like being absolute assholes to like the punk kids, like, you know. Oh,
but
you think
you're
so punk?
Honestly, this blows my mind, because what a way to let kids experiment with something they may want to do. And I understand that some kids probably didn't take it that way. But, you know, without having any real repercussions in life, like you would, like, I'm going to choose to go to film school for college, and you're just like, you're halfway through, and you're like, oh, this sucks. I
don't know what
do
I'm
this.
Doing. Yeah, no, we got to use, like, the editing bays, like the VHS editing bays.
Sure.
I taught myself how to screen. I mean, didn't really learn, actually, because it turns out it's really hard to screen print. But, you know, the art teacher was like, you can figure out how to screen print in this semester. I was like, fuck, man. When I look back, I'm like, I was taking like college level shit, even though I was kind of my own teacher. Like, that is just so cool to be able to nurture that in people that have a clear passion. Like, my dad has always said, so my dad has gone to like a ton. I never went to college besides like a year of community college.
Mm-hmm.
My dad has gone to like way more college than most people go to. He's changed careers a million times. He's had a lot of different jobs, and he's always talked about, he's never just had that one passion. Like, he's always looking for his calling or his hobby. And he's never had it. It's never been clear. And it's kind of like he can grasp it for a little bit and then it changes. And so he's always like, I'm envious of you, because, and also very proud of you. But like, you always knew what you wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
And you just kept trying to get there. And so I'm very grateful that I've had like a thing that I've wanted my whole, and it hasn't really I mean, it's changed. It's not what I thought it was going to look like by any means. But the passion, like in COVID, really made me double down. Like, I love making music. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean I'm going to have a career making it, or I'm going to like pay the bills making it. But I love it and I need to do it. It makes me happy. And when I don't do it, it makes me crabby. So like, okay, I need to do it. Just like I need to meditate and I need to fucking get 8 hours of sleep and shit. Like, I need to do it, or like, it kind of fucks with me.
Yeah.
So it's been good to just have this thing like that I'm kind of tied to that has been kind of unwavering. Like, I have never really fully been like, I'm never gonna make music. You know, it's just like that is very rare that I feel those feelings. Bringing you up to the surface, dragging you up to the shore, holding you up to the sun like this is yours, it's yours. They tried to attack you, they tried to make you.
Hot damn. Well, that was part one of the Laserbeak episode. Part two will be coming in the next episode next week. It's really interesting to record this outro right now. John and I, or myself alone, have never really done this, where we've had a chance to re-listen to the episode and kind of process everything that was said, because I don't really process things in the moment, which is interesting because I host a podcast like this, but nevertheless, here I am, and it was pretty cool to re-listen again I just wanted to add a note that I'm not ashamed of being a Juggalo or a reformed Juggalo. It's just, it's part of my history and just not who I am anymore. So it's interesting that when I made music, and if you're not familiar, and I'm not saying you got to go do this, but if you're interested, you can go to Lunatics Forever, and Lunatics is Lunatix forever.com, and that brings you to a landing page where you can listen to all the music we made. As Lunatics Productions, I was in the band Ruthless. John was in Players Lounge Crew, PLC. And we were kind of, we had that stigma of a Juggalo music, but we weren't like horrorcore. We just kind of ran. A lot of Juggalos liked our music, and we welcomed it. There's nothing wrong with that. Would have been nice to have the success of Doomtree, but that's not how it worked out for us. But I love Doomtree, and Laserbeak was such a genuinely nice person. And you know, like, obviously it's not on the podcast, but when he walked into my house and, like, he met my wife and one of my kids was at the table and he's interacting with them and the dogs and just complimenting things. Just a genuinely nice person, and I really, really respect that for somebody at his level. And success. So I'm greatly appreciative and thankful for him coming through and doing this. Just a reminder to go to your, however you're listening to this podcast, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher Radio, whatever. And if you could leave me a review, we appreciate that. That's how we let people know that if we're good or if we really suck. And I do appreciate that feedback, good or bad. So be sure to check back next week for part two of the Laserbeak episode interviews, saga, series, sequel. And this is Rob saying, I love you. I don't know. Bringing you up to the surface, dragging you up to the shore, holding you up to the sun like, is this yours? It's yours. They tried to attack me. They tried to lay me. We're waiting on a storm to hide the way. Bringing you up to the surface, dragging you up to the shore, holding you up to the sun like, is this yours? It's yours. Can I get a witness? Can I get a clue? If I can't, can I get an amen or a view with a few in the crowd that are crowding around the canals and the masses are catching the rational savage of you? Wrapped in a branch, wrapped in a branch, wrapped him in you. We'll scream to cause avalanches. That ceramic sunsets for you. That ceramic sunsets for you. That ceramic sunsets for you. That ceramic sun. That ceramic sun. That ceramic sunsets for you. That ceramic sunsets for you. That ceramic sunsets for you. That ceramic sun. That ceramic sun. That ceramic sunsets for you. Thank you.